that registered.
Yeah.
I bet it did.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Let's give it just a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds. This is an interview with Cliff Egler on March 26, 1994, for the Leelanau Voices project of the Leelanau Historical Museum. The interviewer is Mary Ellen Hedgeski. Cliff, let's start with some of the information that's on the biography sheet. Your full name, I forgot to ask you your middle name.
Clifford Glenn Egler.
Clifford Glenn Egler, and your address and telephone number.
4961 Gulfview Drive, 256-9977.
And your parents' names?
My father's name, William Henry Egler. Mother's name, Hattie Kropa Egler.
And your wife's name?
Judith Marion Egler. Maiden name, Zabel.
That is Dino's.
Dino's daughter.
Dino Zabel's daughters. And your children's names?
Susan Decker, Darrell, David, Daniel, and Gail Worm.
And David and Daniel are the twins?
Yes.
Let's begin with what you know of when your family first came to Leelanau County.
Near as I, from the information I've gathered, they came here, my dad's side of the family, right around 1860, 1865, and it homesteaded in East Leeland area, Gilspear. They originally came from Germany. They settled in Chicago for a while, and then they all moved up here, migrated up here. There was three or four of my dad's uncles and aunts that came up here. And my mother's side of the family came from Czechoslovakia. They came approximately the same time during the Bolshevik Revolution and settled in Old Mission Peninsula. My mother's side of the family came here, and my mother's dad stayed in Czechoslovakia to straighten up business and so forth, and they hadn't seen each other for 6-8 years. Then he finally came over here, and they hadn't heard either way from each other, but somehow they located them, their families, and that's where they settled. There's quite a few of the Kropa clan out in Old Mission Peninsula yet. Those direct relatives of my mother's.
Are there any of the Kropa clan here in the county?
There's some Kropas in the Elmwood area, Solon area, but there's none of my mother's direct close relatives are here, as far as the brothers and sisters. She had some sisters that lived in, one in Sutton's Bay, Mrs. Carl Herman, Clara Herman, one sister lived in Omena, Anna Kelchick, Mrs. Martin Kelchick. Another sister lived in Bingham for quite a while, Daisy Mann. They worked in Detroit and lived in Jefferson, and her husband was with Hudson Motor Company, vice president of that, until they went defunct or sold out. You can be careful who you talk around here, because they're all relatives of mine.
Sounds like it. Do you know why your grandparents came from Chicago, why they came up to this area?
That I can't answer. I never have found out. Back when my dad was around and so forth, you never give much thought to things like that. People just came, and that was the end of the history book.
I
never have heard why they migrated up here, but there was quite a few of them.
Or even how they heard about it. And you talked about the road to south from Gill's Pier being where your family farm was. Was that their original location in the very beginning?
That's one of the original locations, yes. My dad was born and raised on the farm. He born in 1887, and he died at 91. And born and raised on the same farm. In fact, one of the few cases to wear the same suit he was married in and he was buried in. That's how often they change dress clothes. And it's on County Road 637, 1 mile south of Gill's Pier Catholic Church.
And it is now the tomato shop.
It's a tomato shop now, yes. My youngest brother operates it, owns and operates it.
And it stayed in the family all of this time?
Yes.
Wonderful. Do you know when it was built? You know about how old it is?
I'm guessing the first part of the house was built around 1880. And then my dad put an addition on around 1922-23 in there. That's the same house, never remodeled or anything.
And you told me you were born on this farm.
I was born on the farm, and there was 12 of my dad's family all born in that house. And there's seven of us kids were born in that house. One sister and five brothers, those seven kids.
I should ask you the names of your siblings.
The oldest member of the family was my sister, Evelyn Potts, and she died, must be 15 years ago about. Then my oldest brother, Theodore, lives in Door. Next brother lives in Ludington, is on the farm there. Then I'm next in line. Then I got a brother living in Belmont. Next brother lives in Fruitport. Then my brother Art on the farm. One brother Perry in Fruitport and Orville in Belmont.
So you're at for Leland then?
I'm the only one in Leland. I got one brother in Leland County besides me.
I am sure that we could ask you much more about this, but we really needed to talk about the rescue squad. So let's begin there. What was your relationship with the rescue squad? How long ago?
I got involved in it when I first moved to Leland from the farm, after I got out of the service and done sailing. When I started working for the Leland Enterprise, my father-in-law was involved in the fire department quite heavily, Dino Zabel. And we automatically, I got involved in this. One reason I was interested in it was when I was on the sailing on the Great Lakes, I was always one of the people that always managed and helped with anybody who got injured and stuff. As you know, on the sailing out there, it's a rough life, and there's always a lot of injuries. And most people would shy from it, run from it, but I always stayed with any injured. And we had some pretty seriously injured people along the way. I started in around December of 54, if I remember right. And we started, our first ambulance was, Dino had a 48 Olds wagon. And we had a stretcher, and we'd take the seat and put the seats down and throw the stretcher in and run. That was the extent of the first aid we did. We didn't know resuscitation or CPR or any of that. All we do was stop what bleeding we could, and we didn't even splint at the time. And of course, back then, if somebody needed an ambulance, they needed one. They were near the deathbed most of the time. And the reason we got started with the ambulance crew is the morticians handle the ambulance runs around here. And we'd be an hour, up to 2 hour delay from the time an ambulance would be called till they would get to the scene. And quite often it made a difference in survival. The first vehicle was a 48 Ford panel job that somebody gave the department, and we don't remember who. And we equipped it ourselves with stretcher, and we had a resuscitator in there. It worked part-time. And backboard, and that's about it. Then after we run that for quite a while, that was stored in Van's garage here because we had no place to store it inside. And so if we wanted to get the vehicle for an emergency run, he had a hammer outside the garage. We'd knock the window out of the garage door, reach in and open the door. I checked it out to verify that yesterday to make sure I was thinking right. Because then John would have to replace the window. Then our part of our deal is, our crew back then was John Van Ralte Sr. He'd drive, and of course he only knew one speed. That was a foot on the floor all the time. And then Dino was on, I was on, then whoever we could pick up along the road. And back then we had basically no training. And our training started, I'm guessing around 57, 58, we took our first Red Cross first aid course, just a standard course. And that was taught by Ted Hansen of Northport. He is a Michigan Bell man, and he involved with the Red Cross, and he did our first courses, and that's all we had for quite a few years. Then later on, we got involved in advanced first aid and so on. Our next vehicle was a 60 Ford panel job. Some of you probably remember that. The white Econoline Ford that was given to us by a man from Indianapolis. And then when he gave us the vehicle, and we equipped it ourselves. John Seltzer was instrumental in helping us equip it. And that's when, back then the crew consisted of myself, John Van Ralte Jr., my father-in-law, and Chuck Stander. So that was basically the crew we had, and of course whoever you could pick up along the line. So for quite a few years we had ambulance printed across the front of the vehicle. And then the state said we had to license the vehicle to have an ambulance, so we crossed the ambulance out and put rescue squad across the front. We did the same thing, but just called it different than anything, just to get by. Then our next vehicle was 68 Chevy van, that wide van we had, and that we purchased direct. The fire department in Leland purchased that and gave it to the township, that the association did. That we used until 1988, when we got the present vehicle we have. Back up a little bit on our ambulance thing. The training kept getting more stringent. We had more and more training all the time imposed on us by the state. And so a lot of the people just couldn't keep up with the training, so it's time consuming. And we're going to school continuously. And for a good many years, the three of us made all the runs, John Van Ralte, Charles Stander, and myself. Then we thought we'd get away from it, so we got new people on, and now we're back to where Charles Stander and I make most of the runs. But the training, we started out where all we needed was just any first aid course of any kind. Then we got the advanced first aid course, which was about a 40-hour course, the training. Now the state's imposing EMT courses, which is, I think if you take it now, it's about 140 hours of training. That's a lot of time to ask of a volunteer. But this is one of the reasons that our crews are getting smaller and harder to get crews, because it's hard to get volunteers that can afford to take the time. What else you want to know? Put that on there.
Let's go back a little bit and think about the relationship of the rescue squad to the fire department. How does that work?
Well, to start with, the rescue squad was completely under the fire department. All the rescue squad were firemen. And we're still under the same, operate out of the same building, and we're together. Most of the ambulance crew is, or are firemen.
Would the ambulance crew go out at the same time as the fire engine did,
say? The ambulance crew always goes out with the fire truck, because as known, fire fighting is a hazardous job and strenuous job, and it's good to have the ambulance crew available. We got the same men and so forth, so there's another reason it's very, very important.
How about the rescue squad going out when there's an accident? How are you notified?
When we have an accident, the call comes in now on 911, and we got our pagers, small pocket pagers, that tell us the type of injury and where to go and what it is. If it's a fire, if it's an ambulance crew, call and where to go. Now, where this differs from when we first started, we used to get a call by telephone. We had four or five telephones in the people's homes. And then we'd get a call, we'd go, and the hospital had no idea we were coming or anything. So we'd get there with the patient at the hospital, because we had no communication. So things operated slightly different then, because now we can, two-way radio, we can talk direct to the hospitals and sheriff's department and so forth. And we used to get a call by phone, and then we had the siren we ring or the blow by the fire station, because that would alert the firemen or crew, whatever you had. We also had three alarm boxes in the town, in Leland, that people could pull the lever, and by the number of times the fire siren would go off, we'd know which alarm box it was pulled at, and we'd go from there.
Were you funded from the fire department itself? That's privately funded, isn't it?
The fire department was privately funded up until quite recently, when we joined with the whole township is under one department now, Lake Leelanau and Leland. And the whole ambulance crew to start with and Leland Fire Department was privately funded, one of the few in the state that was funded that way. From donations, contributions, memorials. But now we're basically funded through the township, tax dollars and contributions. We have a millage, fire millage, on the tax bill every year. So the people that live in Leland Township, who own property in Leland Township, are not billed for any ambulance runs. Just the people that live that are not taxpayers are billed for their runs in Leland Township.
Huh. Well, that's different, isn't it?
We feel, well, they got the tax dollar there, and it gets direct use out of it for ambulance runs. Hmm. We operate on volunteers. None of us are paid. Well, except for the last about 3 or 4 years, they start paying the ambulance crews during working hours, from 8 in the morning till 6 at night. We get paid so much an hour.
Where we'd ordinarily
be at a job. We'd be taken off the job. It cut into the payroll. Our pockets too deep after a while. If you make 100 runs a year, it's a lot of time out there. You got to figure an average run approximately 2 hours from the time you get the call till you get back cleaned up and stuff. So if you get the run during the day, it cut into workload quite a bit.
Tell us some, I don't know what your constraints are for names of people or specific incidents, but what are some of the more dramatic happenings? You've been at it 40 years in the rescue squad.
Most of the time I don't give much thought to that. Well, it seems that you ask this question, we get the question, how many lives do you save? Never do I give any thought to that. My opinion is, how many people, how many families have we helped make more comfortable? And how much peace of mind have we given to people? That means more than than how many lives you've saved. Now, you ask dramatic things. Everyone is dramatic, every run, just that in a different way. You never, we don't like to talk about runs. After we get out, like a doctor, we got a certain amount of confidence, and we got to respect that of the patients we haul. One of the problems we have now, we get back to the fire station, we get back during coffee hour, everybody's there, what did you do, who was it, and what happened, and so we got to be very tactful how we answer those questions.
You were with the run with me. You wouldn't give my name to the hospital, so the whole county wouldn't know.
We have to respect that. We do not give names over the radio very seldom, unless they specifically ask for them. And why? The reason we don't do that is it's a lot of scanners, and people picking up our radio conversations, and so often if you get a serious accident, you give a name over the radio, and everybody knows that something happened before the family does. I can tell one, we had a fatal accident one time to where somehow the name got on the radio. And people called the family before the wife knew that her husband had been killed. And now this, it's not right. It bothers you, and you think about something like that quite often. As far as dramatic things, we were involved in an airplane where an airplane went down one time. There was four people involved, and we just transported that time. And it had different accidents to where the worst I think I've been at is where four people were killed in one accident. And you just do what you got to do, and then try to wash it out of your mind. It affects you, sure. The hardest thing for me to handle are if you get a child that's seriously injured, or one of your neighbors or friends get something serious. Around here in a small community, you know everybody, and it's a little different when you get somebody you're real close to. You'll treat them all the same, but still, you get the feeling from underneath that you got to watch. One of our biggest things is too. Also, is if you have a fatality or seriously injured, the family will in the hospital come up to you, want to know what happened or how things are going, and you got to be very tactful how you handle that. We can, if somebody dies on the way to the hospital or in the hospital, we can't tell the family ourselves. It's not our position to. We leave that up to the medics or the doctor who are trained for that, and to handle that.
You were telling me in the ride I took with you to the hospital about the present training and its importance for what you actually do. Do you remember telling me about some?
I got
of
such
the
a line of bull. I can't remember it all.
It was a bit of bull. I remember, but it kept me comfortable.
But I taught first aid for quite a few years, and I've worked with every ambulance crew in the county at one time or another, not in the last few years, but training. And one of the things I have stressed, and I still stress in all crews, is keep your cool inside of you and reassure the patient. Always talk positive. Regardless how shook up you get inside, try your best not to let it show. Because if you lose control of yourself, get all excited, then you've got the adverse effect on the patient. And try and keep a conversation going, one way or another. Don't lie. Don't lie, but on the other hand, be careful in what you say. Don't get somebody with a cut face and, boy, go up to them and say, that looks like hell or something. But just try and do your best to reassure. I think you've got half the battle won a lot of times that way.
Know that you pointed out landmarks as we went by.
Wait.
I'm like this. We were going through Sutton's Bay.
it's very difficult to carry on a conversation a lot of times with somebody you don't know. You don't know their background. And you hate to ask them questions to dig into their life. So you've got to be tactful on getting a conversation of some sort going.
Do you remember talking about the training you're getting now about putting out fires in 10-story buildings?
Oh, yeah. Our training, we talked about training, and we take the same training here in the fire department that the big cities and everybody takes. We get the training as if we had a 10-story, 12-story building to put out a fire on, and hooking up the hydrants. In Leland Township, we don't have any hydrants and this type of thing. But the state regulates our training, and most of that is regulated by unions. Unions are very powerful in the fire and ambulance crews, and they get to the state legislatures, and it funnels down.
Are you a member? Do you have to become a member of the union?
No. None of the volunteers around here are union.
Do I remember, were you part of the ambulance crew that helped in the birth of a child?
Yes. That was three years ago. And that's the first many years I've been on, just that one time. And it's quite a thrill. Well, I'm not a thrill, but it's it's different. Because bringing a new life into the world, something.
And the grandfather was the driver.
Grandfather the driver, and the grandma sitting in the front seat alongside him. You read about ambulance crews where they deliver and stuff, but this is the first time we've been involved. Because one reason we get very little of that, this is a retired community, and the chances of having that are slimmer. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah. Very good way of putting it. What do you think of the present way of doing things? Do you think it's adequate for what's happening in the county or in the township these days?
I think it's adequate, except to look down the road. The hard part is going to be to get volunteers, to get people that can and will give up their time. And it's in any organization, volunteers are harder and harder to come by. And ambulance crews and firefighting are young people's work. It's strenuous, it's hard work. Mm-hmm. You get called out 2 or 3 in the morning, and you don't have a chance to hardly gather your thoughts or anything. You just have to get going, because time is of essence most of the time. And when you get the call, you don't have any idea for sure what you're getting into. It can call to where somebody, just something minor may appear, to where they can be deceased before you get them to the hospital. I mean, it can be that quick. One particular call I remember is, we got a call, this a few years back, to transport an older gentleman to the hospital. So 2 of us went out there, and come to find out the guy was 101 years old, had fallen on a stone pile, and was basically unconscious. But the call came just to transport, and that's all we got. So, I mean, you don't know what you're getting into.
When you say to transport?
I mean, just basically somebody that is not, when they say transport call comes in, it's usually just not in an emergency to where rush. Most of the time that's a case to where they need just to be transported, where they can't go by car for some reason or other.
Oh, to the hospital. But you don't know that when you start out.
That's right. You don't know what you're getting involved in. Then you get some to where the call comes in, they sound real panicked and stuff, and you get there and basically nothing serious at all. I mean, every call is serious, but nothing life-threatening or this type of thing.
You remarked about the difference, the amount of time for training now. Were there any other differences in those early volunteers? and why they were able to do it?
Well, for quite a few years, when the Chuck Stander, John Van Ralty, and myself, three of us did made most of the runs, we were right in town, all self-employed. We could take off. Of course, we'd have to make our time up some other time. Of course, one bad thing about that was that we probably had the three dirtiest jobs in town. We were all greasy, and clothes are always dirty and stuff. And of course, that's got an adverse effect on people sometimes, because you think of hospitals and medicine and stuff, you think of cleanliness. So we carried stuff along. We could wash our hands and stuff on the way to the scene and this type of thing. I think getting volunteers is going to be our hardest problem.
Over the years, without the training, you must have accumulated quite a body of knowledge about how to handle things. How does that work with the present training the young people get?
Very good, except the fact you get anybody fresh out of any training and trade school and stuff, they get the training and they know their training, but put that to practical use is the next thing. And ambulance running is 90% common sense. Just take your time.